Good evening and welcome to the Safilo Group's Q1 2024 trading update. This call may contain forward-looking statements related to future events and operating, economic, and financial results for the Safilo Group. Such forecasts, due to their nature, imply a component of risk and uncertainty due to the fact that they depend on the occurrence of certain future events and developments. The actual results may therefore vary, even significantly, to those announced in relation to a multitude of factors. Today's participants are Angelo Trocchia, Chief Executive Officer, Michele Melotti, Chief Financial Officer, and Barbara Ferrante, Director of Investor Relations. I will now pass you over to Mr. Angelo Trocchia, Chief Executive Officer. Mr. Trocchia, you may begin, sir.
Thanks very much. Good evening, everyone. And thank you for attending today's conference call on Safilo Group's first quarter 2024 trading update. The start of the year was overall in line with our expectations and with the trends we had partially outlined and discussed during our earnings call in mid-March. The first quarter was once again a very positive confirmation of the strength and the resiliency of our European business. We were particularly pleased about the dynamic business environment we continue to experience in our core European markets, where among all brands, Carrera had a really strong start of the year, also making its debut with a brand new women's collection that is gathering excellent feedback. And we continue to register the strong progress of David Beckham in the premium segment, where the brand plays an increasingly relevant role among different men consumer targets thanks to David's credibility both as a fashion icon and British gentleman with refined tastes. I would therefore say, so far so good in Europe. On the other hand, as anticipated, it was a difficult start in North America, reflecting both a pretty poor winter season for our sports business in stores, as already seen in quarter four, and the weak wholesale eyewear market in the contemporary sunglasses segment, where a more cautious order approach persists, while consumers buying online remain more dynamic. It was above all a solid quarter at the economic and financial level. We deliver another significant improvement of our gross margin, and a lot more moderate and improving also on our operating performance. Very meaningfully, we then maintain a good grip on our cash flow, slightly declining the group's net debt. Before I hand over to Michele for some additional comments on the top and bottom line of the period, I would like to stress that our main focus remains the execution of our medium-term strategic objectives. Continue to enhance the uniqueness and innovation of our product and service and to solidify the core asset of our business model. I would like to come back to this at the end of my presentation. Michele, over to you.
Thank you, Angelo, and good evening to all of you. Starting from our top line, revenues in the first quarter reached 277.2 million euros, down 3.5% at current exchange rates, with Forex negatively impacting for 170 basis points. So at constant exchange rates, sales softened by 1.8% compared to Q1 2023. Starting from this quarter, we stopped reporting the organic performance, a KPI which was particularly helpful to highlight our underlying performance during our transition out of the LVMH licenses. This is over, and any current and future entrance or exit will be specifically spotted where relevant. As you know, in the first 6 months of the year, we will be phasing out Jimmy Choo, meaning that we are doing some depletion sales with the brand, with a reduction compared to the one done in the same period last year. This largely explains the drop in sales recorded in the quarter. Therefore, in Q1, before the Jimmy Choo drop, our sales were flattish. Let's now look at our top-line performance by geography. It was a very positive first quarter for us in Europe, where sales were up 5.8% at constant exchange rate versus last year. I remind you that Q1 2023 was a challenging comparison period, when organic sales grew double-digit, net of the decline recorded in the former GrandVision chains. The start of the year was particularly positive in the French market, where we kept strengthening and expanding our commercial network, as already mentioned during our previous earnings call. And we had a good quarter also in our Central and Eastern European markets, driven by the positive performance of the Internet Pure Player channel in Germany and the excellent progress of the business in Poland and Turkey. Angelo has already highlighted the strong performance of Carrera and David Beckham in Europe, where the brand grew double digits. I would also like to add that it was a positive quarter for the majority of our licensed brands, and we also had a promising debut of our new Etro collection. In North America, Q1 sales dropped 7.2% at constant exchange rates compared to last year, which, you might remember, was still a decent quarter in terms of organic performance. The drop in US started to become more meaningful in Q2. As already highlighted by Angelo, the weakness in sales concerned both Smith business in physical sports shop, which was impacted by a soft winter snow season that started slowly in Q4 and continued with a low level of reorder in Q1 this year, and also the eyewear business in the contemporary sunglass segment, where we continue to experience the cautious order attitude of the main wholesale clients. On top, we were penalized by the Jimmy Choo phase-out. The positive note in the United States was the growth of our direct-to-consumer channels continuing the strong performance we achieved last year, and, as you remember, a particularly strong Q4. In Q1, Blenders and Smith D2C business did very well, up respectively high single digits and double digits. Moving to our emerging market in Asia Pacific, our net sales were up low single digit at cost of exchange rate by 2.3%. The quarter was positive for our business in China, also supported by the initial positive effect of the good result of our product and the Shanghai Fair held in March. In China, we had another strong quarter with Ports and with Polaroid, which keeps solidifying its business. Q1 was a quarter of growth also for the business in Australia, where we continued recording the positive growth of Smith, our second largest brand in the market after Carrera, which is a strong asset for us in the country, and where we have now launched CarreraWorld.com to accelerate brand growth through e-commerce. To conclude with our geographies, sales in our rest of the world recorded in the quarter a decline of 12.7% at cost of exchange rates, which was mainly explained by the different timing of some deliveries in our Middle Eastern markets. The quarter was also a soft period for the travel retail business in Latin America, while on the positive side, I would like to highlight that both Carrera and Polaroid continue to make good progress in India. Moving to our economic key performance indicator, Q1 was another confirmation of our ongoing strength of our industrial performance. Our gross margin soared to 60% in the quarter, 160 basis points higher than the 58.4% recorded in the same period last year. Overall, we benefited from the higher production efficiency resulting from the industrial restructuring we accomplished in Longarone last year, which also resulted in a decrease of depreciation. Pricing remained a favorable lever, together with the positive channel mix due to the ongoing development of our direct-to-consumer business. This driver more than offset the dilutive effect we had in the quarter due to the Jimmy Choo phase-out sales. Below the gross margin, the expected normalization of the IT investment and the marketing expenses allow us to keep better under control the still negative operating leverage, bringing home part of the improvement achieved at the gross margin level. We thus closed the quarter with an adjusted EBITDA of €32 million, equal to an adjusted EBITDA margin of 11.5%, 20 basis points higher than the 11.3 recorded last year. Clearly, at the EBITDA level, we missed the benefit of lower D&A, which impacted the cost of goods sold and also G&A for approximately 50 basis points. We conclude, as usual, with the gross net debt at the end of March, which stood at 81.3 million euro or 41.8 million euro pre-IFRS 16, better than the position pre-IFRS 16 of 43.7 million euro reported at the end of December last year. As stressed by Angelo, we are very glad to be able to confirm a positive free cash flow generation also in this quarter, notwithstanding the seasonality of the business and Q4 last year, which was better than expected in terms of cash generation. The period was driven by a positive operating performance and a lowered cash absorption from net working capital thanks to declining inventories. I stop here and I hand over to Angelo.
Thank you, Michele. Before we move to the Q&A session, I would like to make a final point on our licensed brand portfolio, as I think we have, in the month of April, further enhanced the work initiated more or less 1 year ago, when we started to secure our most important license agreements for the long term. The renewal of the partnership with Marc Jacobs till December 2031 is relevant for us. It is an accredited asset of our portfolio, a very long-time partnership with still many new opportunities for growth in its core U.S. market as well as worldwide. I am particularly happy then to comment on the signing a few days ago of a perpetual license agreement for eyewear by David Beckham. As you may remember, we began this collaboration 5 years ago in 2019, introducing the brand to eyewear for the very first time, and in few years, making it one of the most successful eyewear brands of the recent year, a top male brand in the global premium segment, and for sure a great force in our digital universe thanks to David's global audience. This new agreement now marks another milestone within our strategy. By transforming David Beckham into a perpetual license, we secure another cornerstone of our brand portfolio, which is today in a position never occupied before. Let me highlight here two meaningful facts. First, if we look to the revenue we make today with our home brands, plus the perpetual license with David Beckham, which in terms of its risk profile can now be assimilated to the home brand, we are today already very close to 50% of our total turnover. Second, approximately 75% of our licensed portfolio is today secure to the end of 2030. So we have over 6 years of a solid license portfolio in front of us, with all our core license fully secured and the remaining part of the portfolio made by a number of smaller brands, all low single digit. So again, I think that our current setting, as far as our home and license portfolio are concerned, has positioned us very safely for a quite long time. This concludes our presentation. We thank you for all participation into the call, and we are now ready to take your questions.
Thank you, sir. Excuse me. This is the conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. To remove your question, please press star and two. Please pick up the receiver when asking questions. We will pause momentarily while participants join the queue. The first question is from Oriana Cardani of Intesa Sanpaolo.
Yes, good evening. Thank you for taking my questions. The first one is on current trade. So can you give us an update on the trend that you have seen in April and early May, with some details on what is happening in America? The second question is on the perpetual license agreement signed with David Beckham. Do you expect that this formula can be replicated for other licenses? And the third question is on M&A. In the past, you have said that you are interested in brands positioned in the sport segment and in small luxury brands. So has the licensing agreement with David Beckham replaced one of these opportunities, or have you remained interested in finding targets in these two segments? Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the three questions. I try to take all three, and then eventually I will ask the help to Michele. Now, overall, April was a positive month, driven by a continuation of a very solid trend we see in Europe, where in North America the performance were better than quarter one, but still negative. The comps are now becoming easier, both for eyewear and sport business in North America, but the real area of attention is the contemporary segment. The contemporary segment remains quite volatile in North America. Plus, I like just to remember, as I think we had the opportunity to say in some other occasion, we don't need to forget the Jimmy Choo effect, mainly as a headwind, mainly in the H1 part of the year. On the perpetual, I think, first of all, allow me to say that David Beckham has a strategic position in terms of brand. I mean, we have developed this brand from zero. I think it's been growing double digits fundamentally from day zero for a simple reason. It's clearly positioned in what we call the premium segment, so the segment which goes above 180 but below 250. Which is quite a big segment, which keeps growing, and where I think David Beckham is really catching this segment in the best way. On the more broader question on the perpetual, I think personally that the volatility of the market push this industry to have more stability on the license. We cannot afford any more licenses that keep changing too fast. So personally, I think that we will try to discuss with other fashion houses which have an open mind to think or understand if we can have other perpetual agreement along the line of the David Beckham one. With reference to the last question, which is M&A, no, I don't think that the David Beckham perpetual license is changing the approach toward the M&A. I think that we will keep. We have now signed the agreement with David Beckham, but we will keep being looking, and we are keeping looking to M&A in, as I said, as you were remembering, sport or optical. That are the two main areas where we will keep looking for potential brands which have a role in our portfolio. So we will keep looking to M&A.
Understood. Thank you very much.
The next question is from Cedric Rossi of Bryan Garnier.
Yes, good evening, everyone. Thank you for taking my questions. I've got two. The first one is coming back on David Beckham. I'm just curious to understand whom had the initiative to launch these negotiations for this perpetual license, and given the fact that Authentic Brands has a huge portfolio of brands, especially in the US, does it give you any ideas of maybe trying to negotiate further licenses with them? And another question related to David Beckham is, so you mentioned a strong start to the year in Europe, but what about the US, given the fact that David Beckham is also well known in the US, he owns a football club there. Do you think that it is also an opportunity to develop David Beckham in the US? And my second question is coming back on the marketing investment. So as you said during the full year results conference call, you are benefiting from a normalization of investments in marketing, but if you consider that the US market could be still a bit challenging, could you also plan to maybe increase a little bit the marketing investment this year in North America to revitalize growth there? Thank you.
Okay, I'm answering the first question on David Beckham. But look, I think to be honest, we've been initiating this idea with David Beckham. But there is a starting point which is very important, which is a strong relationship that we've been building. You know, David Beckham is really involved in the collection. He really believes in the category, and he takes any kind of opportunity, you know, to put the eyewear on his face and any social media explode. So the starting point was a great relationship with him. But we have initiated the discussion, and to be honest, with David has been quite an easy discussion because he likes what we are doing, and he sees the results. With reference with Authentic Brand, I think, to be honest, that is also a sort of side effect of this agreement, because obviously now we are getting to a closer relationship with Authentic Brands. There are options that we may evaluate. They have some interesting brand in their portfolio, and why not for the future. With reference to North America, I mean, you are absolutely right. I think in this moment, North America is the smallest market for David Beckham, but thanks to the fact that, thanks to Authentic Brands, and thanks to the Inter Miami, so it's becoming quite popular in North America, you are absolutely right that North America will be one of the markets where we should have a great growth in the next years. Michele, you will take the marketing
Hi, Cedric. I take the second one on marketing. Brief on marketing, considering the market environment in Q1, we have taken a prudent stance. But definitely, we always maintain a degree of flexibility, mostly in relation to the opportunity that may arise on the D2C channel. So as soon as we see a supportive channel development of a supporting market reaction, of course, we are always flexible to reaccelerate investment. But at present, considering that, the still persisted headwind also in Q2, as we commented, we continue to have a prudent stance on the market investment.
Okay, very clear. Thank you, Angelo and Michele.
Thanks to you.
The next question is from Domenico Ghilotti of Equita.
Good afternoon. A few questions. I start with Smith performance. So it's a bit weirder to see the strength of the D2C and the weak wholesale performance. So I wonder if you see something different apart from say the winter season. If there is any channel conflict or something that is explaining say this divergence. And second is on the gross margin level, so very good level at 60%. Do you think that this is a sustainable level also going into the second quarter? And the last, on free cash flow generation and net working capital typically is seasonally weaker in Q1. There is anything to highlight that is explaining the very good performance in terms of free cash flow?
Okay, so I take the first one. Let me say the consumer is slightly different, you know, when you talk about D2C and wholesale. So obviously the D2C consumer is a little bit younger, is more on trend, is the consumer which is more flexible in the pattern of the buying process. So I don't see a contradiction with the fact that D2C keeps performing better than wholesale. Also because when you open wholesale, I think today, and this is something that we see that remaining like this, somehow you have a different trend between the different segments. So luxury, which has been growing aggressively in the last year, now has been slowing down, but still is growing. The problem today, the slowdown today, is really in the contemporary area. So, and this is more really specific, for the wholesale, because in the wholesale you have one consumer dimension, but you have also sort of customer dimension that we see mainly on the contemporary bit are quite conservative in the buying. So I believe that at least for the quarter two, we don't see a change in a D2C growing faster than the wholesale. This is if we look mainly to North America. America. If you look to Europe this year, I think we see that the IPP, which last year, you know, had quite a bad performance, we see that the IPP, they are coming back in Europe. Obviously, with a different growth rate, we were used to high double-digit growth rate. Obviously, they are growing at a low rate, but this year we see the IPP in Europe growing again. So at least for us, quarter two, looking to North America, we see that the difference between the trend D2C and wholesale will stay there.
On the second question, Domenico, so as we discussed also in our previous conversation, the significant gross margin improvement achieved last year is I would say structural, and this year also thanks to the greater efficiency of our industrial footprint and the pricing lever, which supported overall a gross margin build, are all factors that are supporting the additional improvement that we have seen and we have achieved in Q1. As you may remember, we were also expecting the inbound transport cost to rise in Q1, but eventually such rise did not yet materialize, and we have actually closed a bit better than our own expectation on this front. So 60% gross margin, back to your question, is a challenging, but I would say is not an unreasonable target, of course, provided that some of the top line speed in the second half of the year and then a continuous support in the channel mix from our D2C business. On the free cash flow, I would say the positive Q1 result, as we've also seen last year, has been mostly driven by the favorable dynamic on the working capital, while despite, let's say, the adverse seasonality, we have been able to control the overall working capital, mostly thanks to a reduction in inventory, more than offsetting the, of course, receivable build-up, as Q1, of course, is the strongest quarter of the year in terms of sales versus Q1, that is the weakest.
And if I may follow up, just can you clarify so the one-off cost, because you are saying potentially affecting, so there is some provision probably put into the Q1 number.
Yes, that's correct, and the cost mainly relates to the potential exposure in a litigation of a license that expired a few years ago.
Ah, okay, so it's really okay, one-off related to that. Yes. Thank you.
Ms. Ferrante, gentlemen, there are no more questions registered at this time.
Okay, good. So thanks very much for the time you've dedicated to us, and have a nice remaining part of the evening. Thanks
very
much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye. Thanks. Bye. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining. The conference is now over, and you may disconnect your telephones.